Hey, I'm Tony Perkins. If you're a small business owner, your life is busy. You can't be figuring out every little thing, how to bring in the next client, how to figure out payroll. You don't have the time or the money to have your own secretary to take the calls, but answering all of the calls yourself makes it hard to look professional. Here's something that's going to help you. It's called eVoice. Whether you're a business of one or 100, eVoice will help you manage all of your incoming calls. With a toll-free number, dial-by-name directory, and call routing tools, your business is going to sound like a bustling Fortune 500 company. Even if you can't take a call, eVoice will transcribe the voicemail and email it to you. And with eVoice, you can even try it before you buy it. Right now, just for our listeners, you can get a 60-day trial of eVoice absolutely free. Go to our website, click on the eVoice banner on the top of the page, and insert the code TPGS. Take charge of your business. Go to our website and click on the banner. Insert the code TPGS at checkout for your 60-day free trial. eVoice, a better way to connect.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
Got that Ringo drumstick going.
I am doing the Ringo
drumstick. I can see it.
Yeah. All right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. There you go. I like this jazzy music.
I have no idea what you're doing now, but it's scaring
now
me.
Now I'm doing the kind of, whose moves are those?
Ursula Andress. I don't know.
Ursula Andress.
Nobody will know who that is.
Hey there, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Is my mic hot enough? Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the
Put
show.
Put your tongue on it.
I'm Tony Perkins.
I'm Gary Stein.
Welcome to yet another edition of the Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein. We are very happy to be with you today and happy that you're with us. Please welcome once again to the show our youthful ward. Youthful ward.
See, when dentures loosen up, you really need to put more.
I need more Polydent. Rock Ford is here.
Yeah.
Tony brought in some of these bagel knots or something like that, and they look delicious.
Well, you should try one.
I will try one. Let's see what we have here.
Let me see.
Well, they're called what? Read the title.
I stopped at Einstein Brothers Bagels right across the street.
Right.
And these are cinnamon sugar bagel poppers. They look like the donut holes you get from Dunkin' Donuts,
yes,
but they're bagel.
Do.
So they're going to be better for you.
You think you're going to let that go by. We're going to let that go by.
But there's cinnamon sugar and
everything nice.
How is that?
Those are fantastic.
I'm going to have one too. Now, are you going to have one?
No.
You're not going to have one?
No.
Really?
No, not after we've forced me to lift my shirt a few weeks ago. And I had to say that I had gained 5 pounds. I have now.
It was 10.
What was that?
It was 10.
It was 10, I thought.
Why don't you go home? Go home, right? You know what?
You guys talk while I eat.
You're
this.
Getting too big for your britches.
Oh, I'm big, all right. But Gary was actually bragging about the show. He is down one notch on his belt.
That's very exciting. Yeah.
That's how you do it? Notches?
You know what? It's one notch.
That's good.
I was talking.
I'm sorry.
It's one notch at a time.
Very good.
That's the way you play it.
I mean, how many notches down are you trying to go?
8.
On a scale of 1 to 4 Beatles, how many Beatles would you give that snack?
Or that snack? 3.5 Beatles.
3.5 Beatles.
Yeah,
Very good.
It's good.
And I'm going snackless.
You're going.
You know?
All right. Now, okay.
You know, you enjoy it for 1 second, then it's gone, and all you're left with is the calories.
Well,
come on.
Yeah, but I've got a good taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I have a good taste in my mouth.
Well, I don't want to find out.
I don't want to tell you about it.
Allow me to have a little sip of drink.
Yeah, why don't you?
With the whistle.
You know what you need to do after the bagel thing? You need to clear your palate.
Clear your palate. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, what did you eat last night? We had dinner.
Yeah.
You had a salad, didn't you?
No.
Oh, no, you had pasta.
I went whole hog without the pig. I had pasta primavera.
Yes, you did.
Vegetables, and then I had them add a little shrimp and garlic. And I have to say, it was phenomenal. I haven't had anything bad at this restaurant. Do you want to give them a free plug? I mean, we have millions of listeners.
Coastal Flats. Great American restaurants chain.
But not the Great American Songbook.
No.
You know what? We go there a lot because you people are awfully obsessive and you go to two restaurants.
You people?
Your family. What do you think I mean? Okay, all right. I'll go where you want me to go. Every black person in Washington only goes to two restaurants. That's why you can't get a table. It's so crowded.
No, no. It's one of our favorite restaurants.
You know, you get that cinder block off your shoulder now.
You know, from my upbringing, you're kind of trained to respond to you people, whether it's being used in that way or not.
Right, so, right. Yeah, no, I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was all you black people. That's what I meant to say. Oh, you gave me that look, too. I got that look of like, what'd you say? What'd you just say?
But it was a good time.
It was great. And we played trivia.
There were five of us, Gary and I, my wife, my son, and my wife's niece, who is a regular listener to the show. Give her a ding.
Thank you, Amber.
Amber, thank you for listening. She listens to every episode.
She does.
And she gives constructive criticism. I mean,
it was good. One time it was good. No, she really likes the shows.
She does like the show, yes.
She loved episode 23.
Yeah, that's right. She's got her numbers 23.
Not really any others, but that was the one she loved.
You know what I meant to ask her at dinner last night?
What?
First, I was going to say, what were some of your favorite moments of mine? And then I was just going to say, do you agree with Connor that I'm the funny one, but you love Tony?
Yeah, probably does. But we had a great time. And I just want to say this. I was going to say it before the show.
Uh-oh.
I decided, let me wait for the show. No, you know, because we do this show now, we get to see each other all the time.
We do.
Recently, because of the schedule we've been using to record the shows, we've been seeing each other every week, multiple times. And we had the Sarah thing and all that kind of stuff. So it's great. This has been like back when I was in New York and we would see each other all the time. It has been a lot of fun.
It's been great. And we're doing the shows, but we're socializing. You know, we're going out and hanging out and having a good time. It's great.
Rob, honestly, if we had had like your digital microphone set up at the table, we would have gotten a show out of that. It was essentially another episode.
I wouldn't have had to come in, so it would have been worked well
for
everybody.
That's right.
You just add the theme music.
That's right.
But you know, we said before the podcast, before we started doing this almost a year ago, we said that basically we've been doing the podcast for years on the road.
Right.
And, you know, for the 6 years of Good Morning America, there was a show every day.
Right, that's right.
Just no one heard it,
right.
You know?
That's what made us think, oh, okay, this could be the podcast.
We could do something.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. It was very interesting because, Gary, you're tired today.
I am.
We stayed out last night. We were out till, for us. Now we're about to
say
this.
They were out till 8 o'clock.
Right, that's right. We were up till 9:30.
I actually wanted to bring this up today. because that's not true. That would be about me.
Yeah.
But because I've always been like a late guy.
Yeah.
But as I'm getting a little bit older, mm-hmm. I'm slipping back and I kind of want to get to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere, still not really early, somewhere around midnight, I'm looking to get to bed.
Yeah.
Rob, I'm just going to talk to you for a second.
Yes.
The Perkins family are vampires.
Is that so?
No one goes to bed. No,
wow.
Not Connor, not Rhonda, I mean, we could be out till 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're still raring to go, wondering why I want to leave now.
Yeah,
wow.
And I got to bed at 2 mm-hmm. last night.
Yeah.
And I'm tired today. Tony probably went to bed 2 or 3 o'clock, and you're fine.
I feel fine.
Now, because I think we were talking after the show, Tony was going to come pick you up from your hotel room, right?
Yes.
Did you invite him into your hotel room, or did you have to go meet him outside?
I don't invite him in the hotel room because people talk.
Well, because with a vampire, you have to invite them in. Otherwise, they can't cross the threshold.
Oh, no. I see what you did there, True Blood. I see what you did there. You know what? I didn't really know about the vampire thing until recently, but I've never invited him in.
Well, that's probably for the best
really
in a couple different ways.
I think so.
It was funny, though. Last night, we didn't leave the restaurant. In fact, we closed the restaurant.
We did. And at one point you apologized to them and said, we're leaving soon.
We're about to leave. Yeah. Yeah, so it was midnight, but it was very funny. There was a moment, we're having a good time, we're talking, we're eating, everybody's laughing and everything. Gary looks at his watch and goes, it's 10 o'clock. How is it 10 o'clock? So I looked at my watch and I said, it's not 10 o'clock. And then he looked again, he said, it's 11 o'clock?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like I turned into a pumpkin.
Right.
It's just, I'm thinking, you know, one of the things, we had a really good time.
Yes, it was fun.
One of my favorite things to do down here when, you know, we say goodbye, I'll see you tomorrow, mm-hmm. is I go back to my hotel room, I get into bed, I put my laptop on my chest,
mm-hmm.
and I watch a Netflix film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking last night, somewhere around midnight, I'm not going to get to watch a movie, And then I thought, well, wait, now, movie or the good time you're having now?
Right, right.
Oh, just stay here.
Right,
yeah,
right. Well, it was good. Also want to say, because I did not remember to say it on last week's episode. I said it to you personally, but belated happy birthday.
Gary's
birthday was June 11th.
Thank you very much.
So I forgot to mention it on last week's show. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And to you and to all the dads out there, the day that this show drops, as they say, tomorrow is Father's Day. So you're hearing this show if you're listening to it fresh. Father's Day week. Mm-hmm. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Happy Father's Day to you.
And to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Rob, would you like to say Happy Father's Day to your father?
Happy Father's Day to my dad, John Ford.
John Ford.
That's in Pensacola, Florida.
Yeah. That's a good name.
It's a great name. Yeah.
Are you all related to the Ford family, the Henry Fords, the inventor of the car?
I love to tell people that I am. So, yes, I am.
Well, is that one of your lines?
That's a great line.
If you go back to whatever his old country is,
yes.
If you go back far enough,
yes.
Probably every Ford is related.
Probably, yeah. You know? I would guess so.
Yeah. Well, we've looked it up, and I think it's an occupational surname. Whoever started our family line lived next to a river and would ford people across the river.
Really?
I believe that's
That's what it was. I think that if you go back generations, it was everybody in your family who worked on assembly lines.
Oh.
And because they go back hundreds of years.
$5 a day.
And you're still doing that.
I am.
$5 a day.
It was tuppence, I think, back then.
Tuppence. That's good. Now, that's old-timey.
What?
That's old-timey.
Tuppence? Doesn't it still exist?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome to the show. Couple of things. First of all, Rob, can you play a little bit of the music that I had you pull for me, please?
Ah.
Yes. Yes, today there will be a little bit of a theme to part of the show. We're going to be talking celebrities today. We've got a couple of stories to tell, but here's what we love. You'll remember weeks ago we invited people, if you've had a weird experience with a celebrity,
right.
An awkward
celebrity encounter.
Encounter, yes, to go along with the encounters that Gary tells about. Yeah. And we've had a couple of responses. We had someone a few weeks ago. We have another listener who's going to tell us about his strange celebrity encounter.
His has a certain air to it.
Does it really? Okay.
Yes, it does.
I don't know the story.
I know a little bit about it.
All right, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be Michael Whittington, one of our listeners. He's in California, so we'll put him on. And then a couple of other celebrity things as well. Before we get to that, listen, I don't usually do this.
And don't.
I want to promote something that's happening on Fox 5. And I'm pretty good about
it. No, you are. You mean this is something that just involves you.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with me, and it's not going to help my career.
That's correct.
Yeah, just, I can't wait. Why can't the whole show be about that?
I was trying to think.
That's a great idea. Rob, do you like that?
It might be nice if you used Fox 5 to promote the podcast.
Well, I do that.
How about more often?
I'm sure this
is not what you expected.
No,
you know,
it's not. I do promote the show on Fox 5 and on the Fox 5 Facebook page and all that. Right now, I want to take a moment to promote something at Fox 5, because on Monday night, this coming Monday night, or depending on when you're listening to it, tonight or last night,
you want to try that again?
Being very specific. Monday, June 22nd, the 10 p.m. news, we will debut our brand new set. The set is so new, you have not even seen it, Gary Stein.
Yes, I have.
No, you have not seen the new set.
It's not the set next to in the other room?
No, that is the morning show set that we've been using for the last couple of weeks, because our new nighttime set has been being built in Studio A, where we usually are. That is finished now, and we're debuting it on the air Monday night. It is a beautiful set, so I encourage you all to watch and check it out. It's going to be great.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
What did they do with the old set? Because I'm wondering if maybe I could put that in my living room and make believe I'm on television. Is that something I can do?
They actually donated it to a school, I believe.
Before you had a chance to call me.
I should have brought that up, yes.
This is going to be like an old-timey reference, okay? But I would like to be like Rupert Pupkin. And I from King of Comedy,
great movie.
I would like to have a talk show set in my basement and actually make believe that I'm incredibly successful on television.
Now, here's how you could have made it not as old timey. You could have referenced Seinfeld back in the 90s when one of the craziest episodes ever, where Kramer finds the old Merv Griffin show set in dumpsters behind a TV studio and brings it to his apartment and proceeds to have a talk show in his apartment.
Yeah, yes.
It's a great episode.
So don't you think that was a salute to King of Comedy?
I guess it was. You know, it I didn't even really think about that, but
and
I guess it
don't
was.
Don't tell me how to be old-timey, because that's actually a pretty old-timey reference now. You know?
Or if you want to get more current than that, I think with Letterman, when he retired, they just threw his desk in the trash
can.
What happened there?
I am so glad you mentioned that, because we haven't, I don't think we've talked about it, and we talked about the whole Letterman retirement. Yes, this big deal, Dave's leaving, all the tributes and the show celebrating him, his last show I thought was great. And then literally 2 days later, there are pictures on Twitter and everywhere of his set in the trash can.
Yes, but what was worse? You know what else is in the trash can?
What?
Paul Schaefer.
Yes, I thought that was over the top.
Don't you think? I'm sure Paul thought so.
He must not have liked
that
very much.
I guess he understands now that he's basically in retirement.
But there was no mention by CBS. It was just people who happened to be walking by. Yeah. They saw the dumpster and said, that kind of looks like the Late Show set.
Wow.
What's going on over there?
Well, didn't somebody fish it out?
I'm sure people did.
It's
got to
be worth something.
Of course. Why don't you offer it to a museum or something?
Well, they were saying they could have done a charity auction. Just a lot of different things, a lot of better ways it could have been handled.
Plus, if you want to, let's just say you want to trash it, which I think is disrespectful. If you want to trash it, do it subtly. I mean, crush it so it's unrecognizable, you know, ship it out to a dumpster in Jersey or something. It was in the dumpster. I'm talking about, you know, the window behind him with the Brooklyn Bridge and all that. All those prop pieces were in the garbage.
You mean that wasn't really the Brooklyn Bridge?
No.
Oh,
Two days later, it's in the garbage where people can photograph it.
That's awful. But you know what I don't think we've ever said on the show?
What?
Maybe we shouldn't. But do you remember when you and I flew out to L.A. and we stole a lot of the stuff from Johnny Carson's set as they retired
it? I wish.
We took the pencils with the two eraser edges ends on them.
I wonder if you can find those on eBay. I wonder, because there have to be people who took some of that stuff and would probably have parted with
Wouldn't
it at some point.
Wouldn't you want anything? I'd want the
anything.
Sofa from the set.
I'd want the cigarette box that Don Rickles broke.
Mm-hmm.
I would want some of the pencils. They were pencils with erasers on both
I
ends.
I just said that.
Oh, okay. Did you say that?
Oh, you probably just heard that. That was me.
I know you referenced them. I didn't know if you referenced that there were erasers on both ends.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, Rob.
And he used to tap it like it was a drumstick.
Now, here's the thing, Rob.
Yes.
Way back in the day, they were just regular pencils.
Yes.
But Johnny would sometimes throw them. So someone came up with the bright idea of, let's have erasers on both ends so we don't hurt anybody and they don't sue us.
Because he certainly didn't write anything during the show.
No. He would pretend to write every now and then.
Yes, yeah. He'd lick the pencil and
lick the pencil. My favorite time when he pretended to write something, we're going old-timey again.
What a shock.
And this is kind of a setup to what's coming in a few minutes with the celebrity stuff. But one of my favorite times, I think it was 1968 or 69.
It was a Tuesday.
It was. He had Tiny Tim on the show. This is before the episode where Tiny Tim got married.
Miss Vicky.
It's not that episode.
No.
Tiny Tim was just a guest. Do you even
know? Well, he was a guest a lot.
Are we still talking about Carson, or are we talking about the Christmas, A Christmas Carol?
No. see, he doesn't know Tiny Tim.
Yeah, tiptoe through the tulips, and he had a little cane.
Through
right?
the tulips.
He had a crutch.
Yeah, he played a
ukulele.
Tiptoe. Through the tulips. What a strange,
you do it a little
strange
too well.
Person.
A little
and,
too well.
You know, back then, late 60s, we all assumed by his demeanor that, you know, number one, he was a little weird. I think even as a kid, you know, back then in the late 60s, as a child, I probably thought he was a quote unquote sissy. I may not have known what that meant, really.
Uh-huh.
But
how are you going to keep this PC so that you can actually say what you're talking
I'm
about?
I'm going to stop there because the joke points
out. We assumed
out.
He was gay. That's
right,
all.
That's
okay
right.
to say.
So you're saying he was a Nancy boy.
Yeah, right. Well, we were saying that he was lighting the loafers.
A Nancy boy. That's old. Give yourself a ding. Now,
yeah,
that's
Nancy
old timing,
boy.
Rob. A Nancy boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's on the show as a guest. And Carson, during the course of the interview, says, are you married? Do you have a girlfriend? And Tiny Tim just giggles. Oh, Mr. Carson. And the audience laughs. Carson takes the pencil, licks the tip of it, proceeds to pretend to write down on a piece of paper, I'll take that as a no.
Yes, I remember that. I saw that.
That's about as far as you could go back then.
That's right. But you know what? You didn't have to go far.
No, you didn't.
For
you
people
didn't.
To know what you're talking about.
That's right. That's right. Very funny.
Let that be a lesson to you.
Thank you. Yeah. and to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, watch the show, 10 p.m. news if you're here in the Washington area, Fox 5 on Monday night. It's the debut of a brand new set, I think. Oh.
Without me being on it.
Without Gary. And not only is it a brand new set, brand new Tony. I'm going to have new clothes on. Uh-huh. I'm going to have new glasses. We've had a stylist come in and talk to all of us about all of this.
Well, that must feel really, really good. You know who my stylist is? Joe Palka. That's what I get.
Well, and unofficially, I've heard that Tony, he said it's a new Tony. He'll also be white.
Yes, that's yes. right. Well, you know yes. what? I am declaring myself in the spirit of Rachel Dolezal.
yes.
Because apparently you can. Here's the place.
Look where we're going.
We're gonna save this for another episode, but apparently we are. Rob is regretting this right now.
Yeah.
We're now at the place in life and in society where you can declare whatever you want to declare. This is what I am and how I see myself, and that's how we are supposed to go by.
Right, yeah. right. But that's nice because it gives us a lot of freedom. I can decide that I'm not white and that I'm whatever I want to be.
You could be not Jewish. You could say you're an Italian guy who's 5'5", and we're all supposed to go, okay, well,
yeah,
from
right.
now on, that's how we'll
refer
to you.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, you just nailed something because when somebody asked me yesterday what religion I am, mm-hmm. I said non-Jewish. I just said, I'm not Jewish. And I said, but no. And they said, well, what are you? And I said, no, that's the religion. It's now, there's a new one called not Jewish.
I think they also call it Gentile.
No, that's something
that's
else.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-Jewish. That's a whole different category.
Right.
All right. Listen, we got to get to our celebrity. What are we calling this?
We're saying we have to get to our celebrities. That's what we're calling it.
It's our encounters with celebrities. Rob, do you want to hit the music? And first up, before we tell any of our stories, is our listener. We mentioned him a few moments ago, Michael Whittington.
Yes.
And we're very glad he sent in his story
yes.
on Facebook.
He did it the right way, you know.
Yeah, this is what we want. If you're going to do it, private message.
Right.
Yeah.
He sent me a message nobody else could see because I don't want them to see what the celebrity encounter is.
That's right.
And I liked his
yep.
and called him. And we booked it, so here, you know, it better be good.
We should say, Michael, you feel free to dial him up, Mr. Ford. Michael resides in Concord, California.
Right.
All right, so let's get him on the phone. Michael Whittington.
Hello?
Michael!
In stereo. There he is.
Michael Whittington is one of our listeners. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Is this a more, I'm going to tell something, Michael, just stand by for 1 second.
Okay.
So before we call people on the show, except for that last call we made,
yeah.
we always call them before we start recording.
Just to check the line.
Yeah, check the line, say, okay, well, you're going to get the call in 30 minutes, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Well, Gary called Michael first thing this morning to just remind him, don't forget today's the day, we're going to do it. But Gary called at what, 9 a.m.?
It was 10 o'clock in the morning, Michael, and so I called you at 7. And while I was dialing,
yeah.
I was thinking, I don't think he lives on this coast. And you know what you did? You did what people do all the time. I said, oh, man, it's 7 o'clock for you. I'm so sorry. And you said, no, we were just getting up. And like, and there's, you know, we always try to make people feel better. You were not in any way just getting up. There's no way. You were in a coma. And I awoke you from a coma.
That's true. And my wife says, why are you waking me up?
Oh, man.
Well, Michael, he apologizes.
I really do.
And
I really do.
Apologize to your wife, too.
And we're going to get you a week for two in Honolulu.
Oh, that's
I know funny. Where you thought I was going. Michael doesn't know about that.
Okay. You don't.
Hang on a second. Hey, Teresa, they're sending us to Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Michael, I just want to make sure you correct that and tell Teresa. Hey, Teresa, Gary is sending us to Hawaii.
Okay,
there's no right. we in this.
Yeah.
What do you do? Can I ask what you do?
Go ahead, ask him.
I'm a musician.
Oh, you're a professional musician? Are you in a band or something?
Yes, I am. The band is called The Pulsators. We're from Northern California, of course, and we play original music. It's kind of a New Orleans-sounding type via Northern California.
Oh, that's so great. That's very cool.
There's so many bands doing that. Michael, when the Pulsators play, what do you exactly plug in?
I'm a bass player.
Oh, okay, all right. We like this. Yeah. I like that you're a musician.
It's great.
Very good.
Great.
Well, we wish you that. Is your music, do you sell music? Can people check you out online?
Go ahead and plug, Michael.
Yeah, do you have YouTube videos or anything?
Yeah, we're out there on YouTube. Mostly it's just people with their cell phones, but yeah, we have a website, Pulsators.com.
Pulsators.com. There you go.
How'd you think of that?
We're on Facebook and Twitter, the usual.
Very good. That's
great.
Fantastic. All right. So
you took up the challenge.
Yeah. So, Gary, you've talked to him. I don't know what the story is or anything.
We put out, you know, that people should share their celebrity encounters, and we'd love to hear them. And we suggested people send private messages, which you did. And, you know, you wrote yours, and I thought it was pretty damn funny. And so I said to you, why don't you come on the show and tell your story? Tell your celebrity encounter, Michael Whittington.
Well, this happened many years ago, I want you to know.
Uh-huh.
And I was working for this company called Alembic, and I was down doing an interview with the bass player for Ricky Lee Jones.
Oh, okay.
And it was in a club called Slim's in San Francisco. And there was virtually nobody there. There was just a few people. It was sound check. And I was sitting at the bar with my friend Mike Guarnero, just sitting there having a beer.
Uh-huh.
And we were sitting right next to Bob Skaggs.
Oh.
And his beautiful, I don't know if it was his wife or girlfriend or what, but she was very lovely.
He might not have known.
Oh, I love Bob Skaggs.
Yeah. You might not know.
But anyway, as we were chatting, they got up to leave, two of them. But one of them had released in the air a very obnoxious, gaseous odor.
Oh, no. someone had a little gas?
Well, it was pretty bad. I couldn't see it that way.
did you say anything, Michael?
Well, my friend Mike leaned over to me and said, Boz's old lady's a pig, right?
Oh, my God.
Well, wait a minute. Why did your friend pin it? Why did he pin it on her?
I think that's just his sense of humor. He's a total comedian. This guy is one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life. And I still laugh about it, thinking about it to this day.
So this is it. Now, you're a musician. You're in a club.
Yeah.
It's Boss Skaggs, very successful musician, you know, all that. He's had hits and all that kind of stuff. But your key memory from this event was the fart. The terrible fart that one of them released.
One of them is still a mystery to this day.
Yeah, but you know what's very ironic about your story? Because we've had some contact with Boz Skaggs in the past, and he tells a story on the talk show circuit about having been in a place, and he got up to leave, and some people sitting at the bar had obviously let loose with enough noxious gas to take out a small city, and he pinned it on your friend.
Right, right. As a matter of fact, he said, and on top of it, as we're walking away, one of them calls my girlfriend a pig.
Yeah. I don't know if he heard that or not.
No, I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure he didn't. Well, that's funny. It's doesn't really make the celebrity look very good, but it's still that's wonderful.
It's not our job to make them look good. We just tell the tales.
Is this your go-to celebrity story? Have you told this story many times to friends?
I've only mentioned it a couple of times to people because, really, it's so gross. It's not like something you do in mixed company too often.
Well, do you realize that you've just told millions of people?
Well, I figured statute of limitations is up at this point. That was almost 30 years ago.
I think all bets are off.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much. This is great. Michael Whittington, his band is called The Pulsators, and it's pulsators.com if people want information about it.
Correct.
All right, we're gonna look you up.
Thank you, guys. You guys are great. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening, and again, our apologies to Teresa.
No problem.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
There we go. So that's what we want, ladies and gentlemen. If you have some celebrity encounter, whether it's about farts or anything.
Here's what I love.
Yeah.
He said he doesn't tell the story very often because it's not really good for mixed company. So he saved it for us.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. Well, you know what? He did feel like the timing was good. The timing
that's
was right.
That's funny. That is very funny.
That's very good.
All right.
Of course, it reminds me of something, but that's never mind.
Well, now let's go on. One of the ways that we got into all of this is because I guess a week or two ago, we were sitting here in the studio, and I guess before or after we had recorded a show, and somehow we started talking about
past jobs and
past
stuff.
Past jobs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Gary began to tell Rob and I this story. And both our reaction, Rob, was like, how come you haven't told us on the
show? Well, and Gary's had so many jobs, so when he started to say it, we're okay, it's just one of Gary's old jobs. Yeah, or he's just talking. He loves to talk, you know. Same old Gary.
Wow.
But then he got into this story, and Tony and I were immediately drawn in.
Yeah, and you said, well, I just didn't think it
warranted, you know. Because I've told a lot of celebrity stories.
Yeah, but you got to tell.
And I didn't think that this was like a topper, you know, the toppermost of the poppermost.
Well, think of it this way. The fart story is the opening. It's your opening act.
You can't say fart and opening in the same sentence. You can't do that. I just go back to Gary's a big talker and all of that? You know, let me tell you something. You are hanging out with Mike and Rob and Rob Bubba and Oscar too much because that's the kind of stuff that they say, but you're 24. You just remember yourself, young man, okay?
You whippersnapper.
You young whippersnapper. I'm gonna rip up those adoption papers. Really? I mean, my goodness. Here's the story. So for 1 year, mm-hmm. the biggest rock promoter in the country, Ron Delsner.
I don't know that name.
Well, you know, you don't know much about music. Anyway,
Tony, he's only the biggest rock promoter in the country.
Well, for a year, yeah.
No. He's still around.
Oh, okay.
I think he's 110, but he's still around. He was old back then. So the Savoy mm-hmm. was a rock club that opened in Times Square, and it was only open for a year.
Okay.
And I was the head bartender. And, you know, and I had already stage managed on Broadway and everything, but there was a little bit of a dry spell there.
Sure.
So I bartended, and I don't drink.
Right.
You know, so that was funny. It was very funny to be a bartender, know how to make a drink, watch people sort of deteriorate over the course of an evening, and maybe even see them spit up. So anyway, the biggest rock stars in the world played that 1 year. I mean, whoever was around in 1980 mm-hmm. played the Savoy.
Okay.
So we had Chaka Khan and Grace Jones and Genesis.
Really?
And a week of the Pointer Sisters and 2 weeks of James Taylor. And we had Mink DeVille.
I remember Mink DeVille.
And they were just starting out.
Okay. All
so
right.
we, you know, in a way, the club featured people on their way up and people on their way down.
Gotcha.
But, you know, Grace Jones doing New Year's Eve was wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is around Pull Up to My Bumper, Baby, that
yes,
kind of thing. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
She was at her highest, you know. I would go on forever in that year of the people that we saw. But what would happen sometimes, the manager would come up to me and say, don't close your bar. And that meant, well, it's the end of the evening. Something mm-hmm. must be going on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we did after hours things.
Oh,
and it could be
okay.
1 o'clock in the morning and he would say, don't close your bar. Someone's
okay.
coming in.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know who the someone was this particular night.
Right.
But the Grateful Dead walked in.
What?
Yeah, at 2 a.m.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. And of course, Jerry Garcia was alive. It was 1980.
Right.
So the Grateful Dead walk in because they feel like jamming. But it turns out they get up on stage and they set up their stuff and it's for just their friends. So there's no audience there. It's the bartenders, the wait staff, and a bunch of their buddies listening to the Grateful Dead just sort of jam for the night,
that's
right?
That's fantastic.
So we would have stayed till 9 a.m. if
right.
we had to, you
right.
know, whatever. But then somebody came up to the bar and said, oh, we got some more people coming. And I couldn't imagine. And John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd walk in together. The Blues Brothers decide to come in and jam with the Grateful Dead.
Wow.
So I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Now, Belushi had been in before.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I remembered from him coming up to the bar, the main bar, there were 7 bars. It was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the old Hudson Theater on 44th Street, about It was part of the Millennium Hotel, which was across from Good Morning America.
This is in the heart of Times Square.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a legitimate theater that was converted into a nightclub and now back to part of the Millennium.
Can I ask one question about this? Because you might not remember this, and I might be wrong, but I believe the Grateful Dead performed on Saturday Night Live. And I'm wondering if this was one of those after parties. Could it have been on a Saturday night, perhaps?
Yes.
Because there used to be parties at, well, not used to be, they still do it.
Right.
Every Saturday
night.
Legendary parties.
Because they've been working that whole week just trying to get the show together.
Right. So it's possible this was a Saturday night after SNL.
Right.
And the Grateful Dead goes in and then Belushi and Aykroyd show up.
Yeah. Well, it's very likely. You know what? I didn't know. Because when you were working those hours, you didn't know who was on Saturday Night Live or anything. You know, our hours were crazy, and I was sleeping till noon. At that time. So Belushi and Aykroyd walk in, but Belushi had been in before, and he was known for kind of, you know, bellying up to the bar like it was a trough, and he would just, you know, come in probably a little bit looped, and he would just drink leftover sips of drinks from drinks that were left on the bar.
Ugh.
And drink out of a, you know, somebody's beer bottle and then take another thing. And so anyway, they go and they start playing. And it's amazing. Mm. You know, they're all laughing and they're playing seriously and they're playing loosely. Mm-hmm. And then Belushi comes back to the bar and he gets plowed. Mm. He gets plowed. He's hanging at the bar and he's now listening to the Grateful Dead play.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a little bit of roaming around the bar drinking other drinks, and I said, he'd been in before a bunch of times. He knew my name.
Right.
I said, John, let me make you something fresh.
Right.
He goes, oh, okay. That's a good idea. So I don't remember what I made him, but I made him a fresh drink. He also asked for a beer, and he hung at the bar for a while.
This is amazing.
Yeah, and then he sort of moseyed back into the room, and he played, and somewhere near dawn, everybody left.
Oh my goodness.
But the story doesn't end there, and that's this is what I told you the other day, and I I guess it's better than I thought it was, you know, in some ways. So that morning, he doesn't go back to a hotel to sleep. He has a flight back to LA, and he gets on the plane, he goes to LA, he checks back into his place at the Chateau Marmont, and he died that day. So this is no badge of honor.
Mm-hmm.
I served John Belushi his last drinks, spent the last night of his life dealing with him, looking at him thinking, how are you such a comedic genius?
Mm.
How are you this amazing?
Because he was plastered and really messed up.
Yeah. And that was his last hurrah.
So let me ask you. So, okay, that's whatever night it was. And then, so you sleep super late. And we have to remember, this is the days before the internet, TMZ, and all that kind of stuff. So late the next day, are you going about your business and everything? And then you hear the news?
The first thing I saw was something that had to do with that woman who was involved, who supposedly was his friend but brought drugs to him.
Yes,
do you remember her?
I don't remember her story? Name, but I remember all that controversy and weirdness around her.
So there was some interview happening on TV about her, and I thought, well, they're mentioning Belushi, so I don't know if she got in trouble, and this is a Belushi friend. And then she said something about the greatest loss of my life or whatever, and then I was glued to the TV, and they said John Belushi dead at 33,
something. I believe.
I think that's right, yeah.
He was so young.
Wow.
And it was devastating, and I worked, I did. We had a Sunday show, and that night, all of us who were there couldn't talk about anything else.
Wow.
It was just amazing.
That must have been surreal.
Yeah.
And you know, you go from this kind of high of what a great night this is, a Grateful Dead and, you know, Saturday Night Live cast members and Belushi, to then this amazing low the next day, and he's gone.
Yeah, yeah. And it was very surreal. It was very surreal to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we basically had a good time at the Savoy, and it was a free-for-all and wild. But also, you know, the 80s, you know, it was people were doing coke in the bathrooms, you know, and they were doing it at the bar. We had to say to people, wait a minute, wait
right,
a minute.
Right.
You know, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. We had people doing security on every floor of the Savoy.
Sure.
It was a wild time.
Sure. Oh, those were heavy party days. You know, remember, this is coming on the heels of the Studio 54 era and disco, and New York in particular. That was party. I mean, we lost a lot of people during that period of time. And there are still some, like David Bowie and others, who they say it's amazing they got through it. Because
yes,
people were eating and snorting cocaine in particular for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh,
it was some heavy stuff.
I saw
stuff.
People doing it at the club, people who worked there, people who ran the club. I won't mention any names. Some of them are not dead. And the bands and backstage. I mean, it was just...
Do you know, there was a time in stand-up comedy, and I started doing comedy in 83 as an open mic act. By about 85, 86, I was getting... In fact, yeah, by 85, I was getting gigs, and I was a paid comedian traveling on the road and stuff. Now, I've never done drugs. I'm not a drug guy. I don't do either.
I don't either.
But there were some clubs that were known to be drug clubs, and a lot of the comics at that time were druggy comedians. They were, you know, and there were times where certain clubs would pay certain comedians in cocaine.
Wow.
That's how they would pay
them.
Wow.
And were the comedians happy to take it that way? Or?
Unless you didn't do drugs.
Well, they were going to spend the money on drugs anyway.
Probably, same step. So, yeah. I mean, it was crazy. That was a crazy period of time.
It really was.
It was.
Yeah, so that was, you know, there were other incredible. Oh, here's another incredible moment at the Savoy that is another sort of celebrity encounter.
Okay.
People would come in sometimes to use the Savoy to rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told, again, it was one of those nights, next couple of nights, we got some people coming in after the show. I thought, oh, after the show. And they're rehearsing something that they're going to be doing. Well, they didn't say. It was Simon and Garfunkel coming in to rehearse their Central Park reunion.
Oh, my God. You're
and
kidding
I
me.
I was there for all of the rehearsals.
Because that's 1981.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the same period. That
yes,
was 1981.
It was. Now, there were some very interesting things that happened that spoke very clearly about the relationship between Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, do tell. I'm a huge Simon and Garfunkel
so
fan.
So, Paul was, at least in his own mind, he was the leader of that group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he didn't always treat art all that well.
That's right.
And that's why several times they broke up.
Yeah,
that's a
very complicated relationship.
It really was. It was, you know, there were moments when they were rehearsing where they were reminiscing as they were doing songs, you know, from The Graduate, you know, mm-hmm. all through the, and having a great time. But there were moments of just real cutting, rude comments. And one that I remember is that Paul was already there. It wasn't late, you know, but Art walked in 3 or 4 minutes later than they expected.
Mm-hmm.
And from the stage, Paul says, oh, the prima donna decided to show up.
Wow.
And Art took it so well. He really did. He said, prima donna? Who are you talking to? You call me that one more time and I'm out of here.
Wow.
And Paul said, oh, just calm. Like, I didn't say anything. Right. Oh, just calm down and come up on stage and let's see if we can get something going.
Wow.
And we were all kind of taking bets about whether or not this concert was going to happen.
Wow.
You know, it was.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
There, you know, one of my, their relationship, very complicated, very, it's a love-hate relationship. And over the years, I remember different things. There is, in one of their final reunion concerts, which were like in 2003 or something like that. There's a DVD of the concert and a little documentary and all that kind of stuff. But there's a very funny moment it's a funny but telling moment, and it's not laugh out loud funny, but they're on stage. Art is talking. He's talking a little bit about their history and when they got together, and he says something along the lines of, and, you know, so we became Simon and Garfunkel. I always thought it should be alphabetical order, so I thought we should call it Garfunkel and Simon.
Yeah, yeah.
And the audience laughs a little, and they're on stage. Paul Simon gets a little smirk on his face and just kind of mumbles into the mic, yeah, you do that. And it's just this, it's a telling little moment.
And they were singing together since school.
Oh, yeah.
They were, met at, like, was it Erasmus High School in Brooklyn or something?
Whatever. Yeah, something like that. The Bronx or Brooklyn or something. Yeah.
They're all the same.
Well, their first hits were in the late, they had a hit or two in the 50s as Tom and Jerry.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, there's a song called Hey Schoolgirl by Tom and Jerry. That's Simon and Garfunkel.
Did they do it animated, like as a cartoon?
No. And I can never remember which was Tom and which was Jerry. Because they took on these stage names.
Wow.
And then that didn't work out. They went their separate ways and then came back together in the mid-60s to try it again.
You know so much. I'm so impressed with you every once in a while. Because, you know, I wrote a special for Tom and Jerry.
Cartoons?
John Goodman celebrates and Jerry's 50th anniversary.
That's right.
For WTBS in Atlanta. I wrote that special. And if I knew that there was any connection to Simon and Garfunkel, I would have used them.
Yeah.
I have the song here if you want to hear it.
Do you really?
Yeah,
let's hear a little piece of it.
You are amazing. This is them. The teacher's looking over, so I gotta
whisper way down low. It's so bouncy, light, breezy.
But
for
you
them.
Know what it also is? This is the Everly Brothers, really, right?
Yes, it is.
Huge influence for them.
Yes.
But listen to their harmonies. It is very Simon and Garfunkel with hearing that.
They're teenagers. That's great. Oh,
that's terrific.
Great.
Good find, Rob.
Nicely done, Rob.
Beautifully done.
Can I tell one other short story? Paul Simon was a guest host on Saturday Night Live many times.
Yes, he was.
I've always remembered the sketch, and I never remember the exact words or anything, so you can find this on YouTube. There was a sketch where Paul is in line with his girlfriend, quote unquote, for a movie. They're going to a movie.
This is the ticket holder's line. Ticket holders only, please.
Well, I hope this movie is worth it.
Yeah. Well, I heard a review of it on the radio this morning. They said it was the most recent movie of the year.
Most recent movie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not saying very much.
It's not, is it? I probably didn't hear it right. The shower was going. I was in the shower.
Paul Simon, hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm sure you don't remember, but I saw you in your concert at Central Park.
You were sitting on a plaid blanket.
Yeah.
Under the elm tree.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've changed your hair since then.
Yeah.
I like it very much.
Thank you.
It's very
thank
nice.
You.
And thank you for yelling more.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, this is my friend Steve.
Hello.
Steve, how are you? I don't remember you from the concert in Central Park.
No, I wasn't there. I saw you in Baltimore in 1981.
Oh, that's right. The Capitol Theater, The Late Show. You were the one who was yelling, the boxer, play the boxer.
Yes, I hope you didn't mind.
I didn't mind. It's just, we had just finished playing the boxer.
Gosh, I just stepped out. Yeah. I didn't know. Sorry.
Don't worry about it. Well, it's nice seeing you both again. I love your hair.
Oh, thank you.
I can't even remember the names of my cousins. This is bizarre. You're amazing.
Excuse me. Hi. Do you remember me? I'm Bill Seberg. I brought your Bridge Over Troubled Water album in Seattle, and I had to return it.
Oh, yes. You had a problem with the second side. There was a scratch on the second cut. The second...
Right.
Did they take care of that for you?
Yes, they sure did. No problem.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I heard your sister isn't doing so well.
Yeah.
Is she all right?
Oh, she's doing much better. Thanks.
Oh, I'm relieved. Great.
You know, I am amazed. You have an excellent memory.
I train my memory because if I get an idea for a lyric in the middle of the night, I want to freeze it so I can have it in the morning and write it down.
Freeze it.
So I work on my memory.
It's hey, Paul, you're going to see this movie. This movie's great. I saw this movie last week. De Niro is fantastic. You're going to love this film.
And your name is...
Paul, I'm Ari. Art Garfunkel.
Art Garfunkel.
Paul, this man was your partner. You were a team.
For 11 years, Paul.
A team for 11 years, Garfunkel.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in.
he can't remember
that's
him.
That's
it's
funny.
It's very, very
But you know
funny.
What? It's unfortunately telling. Yeah. Because very often Paul just did not remember art.
Well,
Well,
here's the interesting thing. And, you know, as with any of these groups, it's fascinating because we've talked about this before, the group dynamic. And yeah, they're a duo.
Yeah.
But you spend so much time together and you've got so much vested in it that it seems that in almost inevitably these cracks occur and everything. And Paul has also had his own very successful solo career that he's kind of wanted to do apart from Simon and Garfunkel. They come back together occasionally.
Yes.
I don't think they ever will again, is my suspicion.
Art had a few hits, but not like Paul.
Not like Paul, no. But Art, you know, Art had a decent solo career, but not like Paul, but had some great hits. I love some of Art's stuff. And when Paul did the Paul Simon concert in Central Park, Art took great offense to that he didn't invite him to be a part of it because he did do some Simon and Garfunkel songs. And Art Garfunkel, if I remember, you know, reading interviews, if I recall correctly, he left town because his apartment is on Central Park and he would have heard it. And he said he had to leave town. And he was very hurt. But I contend that, well, it's Paul's. It wasn't a Simon and Garfunkel concert.
No,
it's a
but
Paul
you know,
Simon concert.
You know that the audience would have gone crazy.
Oh, of course,
and
they
just
would.
The show business of Paul Simon should have said to him, whatever my feelings are about Art, if I invite him up and we do Bridge Over Troubled Waters, the audience is going to go crazy, and he should have wanted to give that to his fans. I get it, but you know, the Beatles.
Hey, it's for Gary for a change.
They have always been very gracious to each other about a stop by and a.
Not always. Not in the 70s.
I'm not talking about the 70s. Yeah. I'm talking about later when things got better between them.
Simon and Garfunkel have done some things over the years. But but here's what's funny. My contention would be Paul certainly has the right to say, hey, I'm going to do a concert. It's just my concert. And in fact, wouldn't it be a little belittling to bring out Art Garfunkel for like a 3-song set? All right, buy Art and then go on with the show. Maybe you do bring him out for the close for Bridge Over Troubled
Water.
Right.
It's a big surprise for the audience.
But here's the other thing that I don't like. On recent tours or when they have gotten together later, for Bridge Over Troubled Water, which is that's a Simon and Garfunkel song, their biggest hit, and it's Art's shining moment because his vocal on that is fantastic. Now, or in recent years when they've done it, Paul sings half of it because I think Paul must feel, and this is such a weird little insecurity kind of thing to me, how I'm reading it, that he feels like, well, I wrote the song, you know, but so what? You wrote all their songs.
I don't think he's very nice.
A lot of people say that.
Yeah.
This is Art's shining moment. Why do you, and you don't sing it nearly as well as Art, why do you have to sing this one?
Because he's short.
He's got the Napoleon complex.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Or a Napoleonic complex.
Yeah,
one of them.
That's true.
I don't think he thought he was Napoleon. But I I never saw him with his hand in his vest.
Wait, is that really what how
Napoleonic complex?
Is that what the phrase is?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow. But it's
I.
Thank
it's okay.
You for,
no,
thank
no.
you for correcting me. Jeez, I've said that so many times.
I would have let you slide. Okay, personally. Right,
I think a Napoleon complex is that you actually think you're Napoleon.
Yeah.
Can I tell one more thing at the Savoy?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was living with the first serious girlfriend at the time, and we were living together and all during the time that I was at the Savoy, and I think she was probably wondering, is he ever going to be successful? he's a bartender at a club, and he's not a kid, you know? So, but, you know, things were like up and down.
Sure.
Anyway, there was a lot of opportunity, as you can imagine, at a nightclub, right? But I was a monogamous guy, and I was guilt-ridden, and so I wasn't really ever going to do anything, I thought. And so there's a woman who, beautiful, comes up to me. She was wearing a mink coat, but I forgave her. And she was gorgeous and drunk. And we were closing the bars. And she came up to me and kept saying she wanted to go backstage to meet the star. Can you get me there? Can you get me there? And that was all during the night. I kept seeing her. And finally, at the end of the night, she came up to me and I said, I just can't get you back to meet, you know, Roy Orbison. He literally, when Roy Orbison played there,
it was Roy.
I actually have a Roy story. Sorry. I won't tell it now.
Okay.
But anyway, she was sidling up to me. And so she couldn't get with the person backstage she wanted to get with, but she was feeling sort of amorous. And I was in the theater section away from most of the people I worked with. And we just, I don't think my kids would like the expression, but I think we were kind of making out pretty heavily.
Wow.
What I didn't notice is that she had bright red lipstick on.
Oh, no.
And we're kissing and making, and no, it doesn't get serious. I'm at work.
Right.
You know, so I put her down on the love seat. No. And, you know, we're getting into it, and she says, you want to go back to your place? And I'm thinking, that's not a good idea. I'm wondering if you have a place. But, no, I don't. But she's rubbing up against me.
Oh, boy.
And I'm thinking, and you know what? And I turn around, I look at the bar to make sure people are cleaning up.
Right.
Some of the women that I work with at the club are looking at, I've known them a long time now. They all know my girlfriend.
Oh, no.
And they're looking at me like, you dirty dog, you two-timer, snake in the grass.
That's the worst.
I'm thinking, hey, I'm trying to get laid. So I actually say to this, and also I'm really not into people who are plastered.
Right.
And she smelled of alcohol, but I didn't care because she was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was feeling my way a little bit.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And then I thought, okay, it's time to shut this down, and you got to go home.
Because you're approaching liftoff and you don't really want to get to
liftoff. I am getting so close to liftoff. I can hear NASA calling. I mean, this was the closest I ever got to cheating on somebody, which I have never done.
Right.
But you know, some people would call this cheating. So I say goodnight to her and push her out the front door. We lock up, and the girls won't speak to me
at
the club.
When you've just done the right thing as far as you're concerned.
Well, not for the last half hour. And so I feel like I need to kind of clean myself up a little bit, you know. So I go into the men's room and I wash my face, and I've got the paper towels on my eyes, and I take them away, and I see that my lips are bright red. And they're not bright red just from like the pressure of kissing.
Right.
I am wearing her lipstick. So I take the soap from the soap dispensers and I'm wiping my lips down and raking them with paper towels.
Oh, man.
It will not come off.
Oh, no.
It will not come off. I'm wearing lipstick. And I'm thinking, I can't go home because she's probably going to be awake.
Right.
And I thought, what am I going to do? I mean, just not go home? And then one of the girls, as I was getting ready to leave, she said, nice lipstick, Gary.
Oh.
I said,
She just shot daggers at you.
Oh, yeah. And and I was thinking, you see what happens when you fool around? And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm walking home. I lived on 78th and 1st Avenue, and I worked in Times Square, and I decided to walk home that night. And I'm going like,
Hopefully she'll be asleep.
I got attacked and by a kissing bandit. And I had a fourth floor walk up, so I still don't know what the hell I'm doing. And I'm walking up the stairs to my apartment going, it's blood. I got into a fight, and there's blood. And I open the door, and I say, hi, honey. And she says, hi, what's that? I said, you know, one of the hazards of working this club is you meet some unbelievable drunks that you can't. I said, do you believe that a girl had the audacity to come up and lock lips with me? I had to get two people to separate us, and they pulled her off, and I wanted her to be arrested, and they just extricated her from the club, and then I realized I couldn't even get this stuff off. And she just looked at me, and she said, let me see if we have anything that'll remove that.
Aww.
And it sort of ended there. But.
So I'm really glad that you said this story, because we actually have an audio clip from that night.
Really?
Wow.
We really do. Would you like to hear it?
You know, if you dig deep, you'll find just about anything.
Just about anything. The internet is a wild place.
Yes. I'd like to hear something.
10, 9, 6, 5.
It probably stops at 2.
3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. We have a liftoff.
Whoa! Wait, but that's from that night. I don't remember getting any.
How long have you been saving a liftoff clip? That's great.
Yeah, the funny thing is he never played it while we were doing Date Lab.
That's wild.
Right?
Well,
and I bet you had it back then.
Well, I think that was appropriate for my situation.
Great. Yeah, that's a tough situation.
Whoa, that's a tough situation.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, you're a revealing man. No, you just revealed all kinds of stuff. I think we're out of time. I'm going to save my story for next time out.
Yeah,
one of these times.
I didn't know you had another one. I would have.
Mine is a little thing. Mine is you know what? It's not even a story. It's an observation.
Why don't you go there?
No one counts us down. You're right. I'll go ahead and do it. It's a little observation about celebrity. May I have a hooray for Hollywood one more time, please?
Yes.
Here comes Tony Perkins.
All right, now, my celebrity in this story is actually not a Hollywood celebrity. He's a sports star, Cal Ripken Jr.
Wow.
The Iron Man of baseball.
Yeah. Iron Horse.
Is that what it is? Not the Iron Man?
Not the Iron Man. Not the superhero.
I thought the Iron
Horse. That's actually Tony Stark.
Right, that's Tony Stark.
I thought the Iron Horse was Lou Gehrig.
Well, he was the second Iron Horse.
Cal Ripken's the second Iron Horse?
I believe so, because he broke Lou Gehrig's record.
Is that right?
So they called him the Iron Horse as well.
Okay.
Did they really?
I think so.
I don't think the Gehrig family would have liked that.
He's not the Iron Man?
No.
I guess he wouldn't be the Iron Man.
Well, the Gehrig family got the disease named after him, and then Cal Ripken got to keep the horse.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, you didn't do a good job of fixing that up at all, but okay.
Well, he thinks he fixed it.
Yeah, I'll go with you on that. We support each other here.
all right. Anyway, so my son likes to go to these sports memorabilia shows.
Yes.
Have you ever been to one of these?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, where they sell baseball cards.
And sports memorabilia.
All kinds of sports memorabilia. I mean, pennants, magazines, all kinds of stuff. It's insane. And now, I shouldn't say now, but you can also... At any one of these events, there's an event that's held at the Dulles Expo Center here in Chantilly, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
I think it's twice a year. And the number of athletes that they have is amazing. I mean, Hall of Famers, Cy Young Award winners, all kinds of people signing autographs, right?
Uh-huh.
For money.
Yeah.
Which I think is weird.
Yeah, I've been to those. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I mean, listen, I get it. If they need the money, if you're an older player who didn't make a lot of money back then or whatever, but when you're a current superstar and you're charging $50, $75 for an autograph,
is it that much?
Oh, it could be more than that. It could be $200. It ranges. The autographs range from free from some people to probably $200. Depending on what you're signing.
Yeah.
And like for my son and his friends, usually Connor and one of his friends will go. They spend a couple of weeks. You get the sheet in advance. You see who's going to be there, what they're charging. And you really have to figure out, okay, I want to meet him and him and him, because you have to budget. You know, I might say, Connor, you've got $250 to spend, for example.
Right.
Well, then he's got to figure out, am I going to spend $100 on this person, which they don't typically do. So they tend to get the autographs of lesser stars, or I shouldn't say it that way, but they're not as big because they're more affordable. And I think that's a terrible position to put these kids in for the most. Well, they're two, it's kids. And it's professional collectors.
Yes.
Who come in with helmets.
It's big business, Tony. It really is.
It really is. And some of it's a little, I don't like it much. But some of it's great. You know, you get to see these people. It's very cool.
Go ahead. Tell your Cal Ripken story.
Okay. Am I taking too long?
No, no.
Mr. 30 minutes
It's just an opportunity to go, oh. yeah. That's true, but it was entertaining.
Oh,
ouch! Ouch! Ouch!
Such cruelty.
Yep.
Anyway, we're...
Go ahead, start over.
Cal Ripken Jr., who I've met a couple of times, one of the greatest...
So have I.
Isn't he great?
He's fantastic.
He is like a superhero. He's got a good heart. Everything about him is in the right place, the way he thinks.
You mean his arms, his legs?
His arms are where the arms should be.
Exactly.
Anyway, he's taking pictures with people in the back, and then the word comes out. He's about to come out to make his way to the autograph table. So many of us stand in, those of us who are not billionaires, stand there, because if you can get him on his way, you can get a quick picture. Now, they try to keep him moving so people don't do this, but if you got kids with you, they stop for the kids. So you can get a quick picture. It's an unofficial picture, but you can get a picture. They won't do autographs because they'll just do that, but you can say hi, get a handshake, whatever. So we're in position with a bunch of people. Connor and his friends are so good about it. As soon as they start walking, getting in front of them, hey, Mr. Ripken, I love you, blah, blah, blah. May I get a picture? And they turn around real quick and we take the picture. But a bunch of people are trying to do this. Ripken comes out. People gather around him, and almost we pretty much stop him in his tracks. And he says, I'm sorry, folks, give me a minute. I got to go to the men's room. And he turns around and walks into the men's room. The door is right behind him. I would say 50 to 60 people stood there waiting for Cal Ripken Jr. to come out of the men's room.
Oh, wow.
And I actually, if I recall correctly, I took pictures of this because I thought, this is really sad and inappropriate and uncomfortable, because
he's got to do what he's got to do. Yeah. You know, he's like everybody else. But did he bring a bat in there with him?
Well, I said to Connor and I said to my wife, imagine he's going in there. He's got real business to do.
Well, the iron horse had an iron log.
That's where I was going.
But imagine, so now put yourself in his shoes. You're like, if I spend 10 minutes in here, they're all going to know
that I'm not just taking a leak.
What I was doing, right, yeah.
That's, yeah. It's not good.
It's not good.
No.
The whole orchestration of it was weird, because he goes in. He has to go to the bathroom. He goes in. Everyone's standing there.
I hope he came out quickly.
Like a minute later, the door opens, and it's just some average schmo who comes out. But as soon as the door opens and this guy steps out, flashes go off. Just in case it's Cal Ripken Jr. And it's this guy, and this guy's like, hey, Cal Ripken's in there. Like, we know. That's what we're waiting for. Someone else comes up, a regular guy, to go to the bathroom. And Ripken's handler is, you can't go in right now.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, because they don't want someone going in, say, to bother him, you know?
Well, but you can't just keep somebody out of a public bathroom just because Cal Ripken's in there.
Well, you kind of have to, because otherwise, think about it. Because then people would stake out the bathrooms. When they see these people go in, then they go in.
Yeah, but what if the guy is having a rain delay? You know?
I'm sorry, I gotta go. I gotta do my business. I guess if you can talk him into letting you in, that's fine.
I'm sure the handler had to call an audible. Use a sports term at the sports show. Yeah. I had to call an audible. Yeah. I mean,
if it's someone who looks like they really got to go, they're dancing around.
Well, and 60 people gathering around the bathroom.
Yeah, it was.
That's
such
a weird circumstance.
It is a weird. But Ripken, so he came out like in 2 minutes. So yeah. He, you know.
Nobody wanted to shake his hand.
I was. It would be. I did.
You're a little germ conscious, you know.
But this is what I thought. I thought it would be so funny if he came out like with his hands really wet or something, and he like waves to people and water comes off his head. I wondered how many people would kind of flee or back away.
I think it would have been very funny if he came out with a giant wet spot.
I mean, he could have played it a number of ways just as a joke.
Or a piece of toilet paper on his shoe.
Right, that's right. Yeah. But he came out, and he was, listen, he's a gentleman. He's really cool.
He's great.
He stopped, he took a couple of pictures, and then he went on his merry way. But I thought, really, we're waiting for a guy to come out of the bathroom? And there were a couple of people making jokes about it, like, what are we doing?
This is, you know,
we should let him go to the bathroom in peace. And they kind of go, yeah, and then they would stay there.
Yeah, of course.
I just thought it was still the autograph.
Right.
That's right. Very strange.
Oh,
so that's my little celebrity.
Oh, it's very good. I like that. That's
it for the show. We want to thank Michael Whittington for his phone call. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Absolutely. Hey, real quick, can I make a quick request?
No.
I just finished the show. Are you making a request?
Okay. Well, we said at the top of the show it is Father's Day, and yes. John Ford, my dad, his favorite song is Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Oh.
So why don't we go out on that song?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No. I was going to play a Grace Jones Pull Up to the Bumper.
Oh.
Does he like that?
Couldn't tell you. I guess it's going to have to do, though.
No. I love Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
let's give it to John.
Happy Father's Day, John Ford.
Take care.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes,
a girl. Sail on by. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine.
Tony Perkins Show, a Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.